Support comes from Sunday Morning Cafe, founded by researcher, speaker, and therapist Dr. Tom Wagner, offering mini retreats with live music and online resources to build resilience and community. SundayMorningCafe.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Friday, May 15th. I'm Abby Larico. Some Black St. Louisans whose homes were severely damaged by the May 16th tornado say the storm destroyed their home ownership dreams. If demolitions aren't sped up, some may become forever renters.
And I got to thinking, I'm 74 years old. Why do I want a home again? And I was like, well, let me just go to an apartment.
Now they're figuring out their place after the storm. Plus, this week we've brought you stories that showed what slowed the city's response to the tornado. Today, we're talking about how it can be prepared for the next disaster.
SEMA really needs to be funded and staffed up.
That's all coming up on The Gateway. Both city and state demolition programs in the path of the May 16th tornado are now fully active. That's according to St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer's office. St. Louis Public Radio's Kate Grumke reports the state has now started work that is eligible for federal reimbursement.
When the Federal Emergency Management Agency denied St. Louis's request to have the Army Corps of Engineers do debris removal, Governor Mike Kehoe announced the state would oversee the project instead. That was in September. Now the state's first demolitions are starting, and these are eligible for reimbursement from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, unlike other demolitions the city is currently handling. A spokesperson for Mayor Kara Spencer says up to 65 homes are in the pipeline for this project. They started by demolishing two. I'm Kate Grumke, St. Louis Public Radio.
The surviving spouse of tornado victim Patricia Pendleton filed a lawsuit this week against the city of St. Louis and leaders at the now-demolished Centennial Christian Church. STLPR's Lucretia Wimbley reports Pendleton was one of five people who died as a result of the May 16th tornado.
74-year-old Patricia Pendleton died at the church while leading a focus group that gathered insight from homeless individuals. Now, her husband, Harry Pendleton III, is suing the city for its failure to sound tornado sirens. He says as a result, his wife didn't have enough time to get to safety. Pendleton also alleges the church didn't adequately repair bricks in the building, causing them to collapse on top of her. Patricia Pendleton spent nearly 40 years volunteering her time at Centennial Church in Fountain Park. Her husband is suing for at least $150,000 in damages for medical bills, funeral costs, and loss of companionship. I'm Lucretia Wimbley, St. Louis Public Radio.
A bill set to be introduced before the Board of Aldermen today proposes allocating $230 million in RAM settlement funds across the city. Mayor Kara Spencer, Board of Aldermen President Megan Green, and other city leaders shared details of the proposal yesterday. About $110 million would go toward North St. Louis, which was devastated by last year's tornado. Green says this necessary funding is part of a long process.
And I want to assure them that we don't see this as a final step. It's just one of many steps that we need to take to address this crisis across our city.
Mayor Spencer says the money is needed to address important city infrastructure.
Our needs are absolutely at a critical point. These are funds that are sitting there, and we are all united in the desire to see something get done.
As for the rest of that $230 million, about $65 million would go toward city infrastructure and $55 million to downtown revitalization. With the 2026 legislative session winding down, Governor Mike Kehoe is contending that the Missouri General Assembly was much more productive in 2026 than most people expected. But as St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports, a key part of the Republican chief executive's agenda is up to Missouri voters.
Kehoe told reporters that the legislature managed to pass meaningful bills to tackle public safety and a ballot item aimed at eliminating the state's income tax. After a 2025 session filled with bitter acrimony between Republicans and Democrats, Kehoe says the working relationships were far better in 2026. Kehoe says the session would still be a success if voters end up rejecting his plan to expand sales taxes as a way to eliminate the income tax.
This is a transformational moment for our state, and it's about more than just taxes. It's about growth,
Kehoe has not decided whether Missourians will vote on the tax plan in August or November. In Jefferson City, I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Governor Kehoe also said Thursday that he does not plan to call a special session to once again redraw the state's congressional lines. Southern states such as Louisiana, Alabama, and Tennessee rushed to create new maps after the U.S. Supreme Court weakened protections for majority-minority districts. Some Republicans have called for transforming the state's St. Louis-based 1st Congressional District into a more GOP-leaning seat. Kehoe, though, says he's focusing on a potential referendum over a congressional map passed last year, which he calls the Missouri First map.
Well, as you know, things in this building change hourly sometimes. But no, right now, I think we would like Missourians to have a chance to vote on the Missouri First map.
Missouri Republicans redrew the state's congressional map last year to make it harder for Democratic Representative Emanuel Cleaver of Kansas City to win re-election. In the final hours of the legislative session, lawmakers passed a set of incentives aimed at luring greater downtown development and creating housing. As St. Louis Public Radio Sarah Kellogg reports, some downtown St. Louis buildings could see a turnaround as a result of this legislation.
The bill provides incentives to develop underused or vacant buildings, including creating new housing. Cities will be able to use the incentives through designated innovation zones that will allow for that development. The legislation also creates a tax credit for converting non-residential property from office use to predominantly residential use. Senator Steve Roberts, a St. Louis Democrat, is one of the lawmakers behind the bill. He mentioned the downtown AT&T building in St. Louis, which has been vacant for years, as a possible beneficiary.
It's just really, unfortunately, kind of become a blight on the area, but that project in particular will benefit from this legislation being passed.
The legislation now goes to Governor Mike Kehoe. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
Major changes are also coming to health care in Missouri after the legislature passed a wide-ranging bill on that topic yesterday. As St. Louis Public Radio's Lily Halloran reports, many of the new provisions will affect mothers.
One allows doctors to prescribe prenatal vitamins and recommend doula services, which will be newly covered by Medicaid. Another expands the state's maternal mortality review board to ensure there are representatives from across Missouri, which St. Louis Democratic Representative Lakeisha Bosley says is needed.
This is not just an urban or a suburban issue. This is something that affects rural communities across the entire state.
The board will be required to work on identifying maternity care deserts and recommend ways to eliminate racial disparities in maternal mortality. According to its 2025 report, Black women in Missouri are 2.5 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes than white women. In Jefferson City, I'm Lily Halloran, St. Louis Public Radio.
And congratulations to Lily, who graduates from Mizzou this weekend. She's been our State House reporting intern this spring, and she's already such an excellent journalist. We're really excited to see what you do next. Since the May 2025 tornado hit St. Louis, many Black homeowners have been renting while they wait for their homes to be repaired or demolished. As St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports, some homeowners are considering renting forever instead of buying another home, which could further widen the home ownership gap.
Christy Jefferson Bay always dreamed of owning a home in St. Louis. In 2007, Jefferson Bay and her late husband purchased their ideal home in the Penrose neighborhood.
We have the outside for the kids to play and everything, nice yards and stuff like that. He was a truck driver, plus he had his own hobby, so he had two garages back there. He can do his work, paint his cars.
Now, the 5-bedroom, white panel, 2-story home has become a bad dream for Jefferson Bay's family. When last year's EF3 tornado hit her home, it caused her roof to cave in, windows to be blown out, and the house to shift. But beyond the physical damage, this past fall, she decided to return the home to the bank. She says making monthly mortgage payments on an unrepairable home and paying rent elsewhere made her home unaffordable. Jefferson Bay's insurance policy covered some of the repairs, but it wasn't enough. She tried to salvage the home, but struck out on every side. Her Penrose home eventually went into foreclosure. Jefferson Bay is now renting in the Baton neighborhood. She feels a sense of relief, but says she worries that generational wealth will now be harder for her children to obtain.
I kind of feel disappointed, like I failed them. But I'm also excited because their mindset is a little bit different. They're not really interested. But at the same time, just what it could have offered, because if anything had happened, then my children got something to come back to.
And this is a common concern for many Black families in North St. Louis who are struggling to repair their tornado-stricken homes. Anna Kent is an expert on local economic disparities. She says she worries that Black homeowners in North St. Louis might decide their homes aren't worth it anymore.
That's going to create space for investors to pick up some of these properties, but that, of course, might create this pressure where they might be putting in a lot of money, which seems like a good thing on the surface, but it might displace other Black homeowners who maybe were able to or wanted to stay in that area.
According to recent census data, the Black homeownership rate in St. Louis is about 41%, compared to white homeownership of about 62%, both slightly below the national average. The Black homeownership rate in the city has barely changed since the Federal Fair Housing Act was approved in 1968. Both experts like Kent and Black homeowners like Deborah Dupree worry that the gap will continue to widen if the city doesn't make faster progress on home repair and demolition efforts. Down the street from Jefferson Bay sits Dupree's place, which suffered similar damage. The retired city police dispatcher has been living in her two-story red brick home for 20 years. Dupree's insurance company has paid her for the home, but she's been waiting for the city to demolish it since December. She says the longer it takes, the more she's inclined to give up on the idea of home ownership.
And I got to thinking, I'm 74 years old. Why do I want a home again? And I was like, well, let me just go to an apartment.
Now renting in South St. Louis, Dupree dreams of one day maybe putting a container home on her plot of land. But she says that hope is slowly fading away because the city isn't moving fast enough.
My main thing, tear my house down. Take the sewer site off the block. Maybe the block can look a little better without this house with the roof missing on it.
St. Louis officials finally announced this week that they will begin demolishing 120 more tornado-damaged properties, including Jefferson Bay's now bank-owned home. But the longer some North St. Louisans rent, they say their dream of home ownership may also be destroyed. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
This week, St. Louis Public Radio has brought you stories that shed light on why recovery after the May 16th tornado has been so slow. We've also brought you the voices of residents trying to rebuild and recover. But looking ahead, there's one major question on St. Louisans' minds. Are we ready for the next big storm? To talk through it all, I'm joined now by STLPR's Hiba Ahmed, who's been reporting on the tornado recovery for the last year. And Hiba, let's just start there. Is St. Louis ready for the next big storm?
So St. Louis city officials will tell you, yes, they are in a better position today than they were on May 16th of last year, in part because now they have the experience of dealing with a major disaster like the EF3 tornado that blew through our region. And the city has made some changes, right? Remember, the sirens didn't sound the day of the tornado. Mm-hmm. Many of those have been repaired and fixed. They have also been automated, so they are now linked with the National Weather Service. So we start getting the phone alerts, we start to hear the sirens. All of that infrastructure really has been updated. The mayor has also started to bring in some more experience individuals to lead some of these critical agencies that are tasked with dealing with major events like the tornado. Mm-hmm. One person is Greg Favor. He is the new commissioner of the city's emergency management agency, which is tasked with responding to the storm in the early days.
Mm-hmm. SEMA, we've come to know it as. Okay, so what are the steps the city has to take?
The big one is SEMA really needs to be funded and staffed up. So earlier this year that we reported that it has faced chronic underfunding. I've been told time and time again that, you know, it's one of those agencies that you don't think about mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis because they are really called upon in times of emergency, right? Baked into the name. And the other big thing is that the city's emergency operation plan was severely out of date. The last time it was updated was 2003. And he says that once his agency, SEMA, has the staffing and funding that it needs, they will be able to really tackle revamping implementing the emergency operations plan. SEMA has asked for $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. That would allow them to have up to 11 full-time staff. The city has a budget of about $800,000 for SEMA, so that would give them about 8 full-time employees. Mm-hmm. That is up from the amount of people who were working in that office last year. There were just 3 people, 3 full-time staff at the time, and that in part did really slow down the initial response to the tornado.
I see you've also looked into something called mutual aid agreements. But what are those and how would those help?
Yeah, so mutual aid agreements are these formalized agreements between different agencies within various municipalities in our region mm-hmm. that basically say, hey, I am the street department of the city and I'm the street department of the county. And in case a major disaster or a really big storm comes into place, we will all bring our dumpster trucks together to help remove the debris. Basically, those agreements are in place in times of emergency to support one another because, of course, as we know, these storms don't just like magically stop at mm-hmm. the city-county borderline, right?
Right.
And the city does have some mutual aid agreements. For example, the fire department in both the city and the county have those, and they had them at the time of the tornado. So that's why you saw some of the county fire staff coming in to support our city workers in the immediate aftermath of the tornado.
One of the criticisms from tornado-impacted residents was that they weren't seeing support from the city in the recovery process. The city did pass $30 million in RAMS funding to support residents. What happened there?
Yeah, so that money was passed in July of last summer, but it took the city a while to stand up programs that these funds could be directed to. So think like a home repair program, right, that would really help impact and make a change for residents. You know, the city needs to figure out a way to move money faster. That's something that we've heard from residents time and time again. The Board of Aldermen discussed passing an emergency contracting measure, but didn't end up actually pushing it all the way through. Basically, what that would do is just speed up the process for the city to get contracts in place to be able to do the work of rebuilding or recovery that needs to happen in times of a disaster like this.
STLPR's Hiba Ahmed bringing us some solutions and some answers to the big questions following last year's tornado. Hiba, thanks so much.
Thank you, Abby.
This week, St. Louis Public Radio has been exploring the struggle to recover from the tornado, the flailing government response, and the fight for North St. Louis. You can find more of our coverage, including some more details about the solutions Hiba and our reporting team looked into, as well as some personal stories of surviving the tornado as told to our Katie Gravich at stlpr.org/torn. Today's stories were edited by our Jessica Rogan and Brian Moline. The series continues next week with stories including digging deeper into what our reporting has uncovered about the last year. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway. Have a great weekend.